ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
Second Canto, 10th Chapter 2, The Lord in the Heart, Text 25. Tat Vishvanadam
Tu
Ativakya
Vishno
Aniyasa
Virajena
Atmana Eta Namaskritam
Ramavidam
Ubhaiti
Kalpa
Ayusha
Yat
the Buddha Ramante. Tadvishvanabhim Pratibhacha
Vishnu
Aniyasa Virajena Smanaika Namaskritam Brahmavidam Upaiti Kalpayusho Yad Vibhuta Ramante Vishvanadam, navel of the universal personality Godhead. Two, but Ativarcha, crossing over. Vishnu, of Lord Vishnu, personality Godhead. Aniyasa, to the mystic perfection. Virajena, by the purified. Atmana, by the living entity. Eka, alone. Namaskritam, worshipable. Brahmavidam, by those who are transcendently situated. Upaiti, reaches. Kalpa Ayusha, a period of 4,300,000,000 years, solar years. 4,300,000,000 years. Yat, the break. Vibhuta, self-realized soul. Ramante, to endure. This Shishumara is the pivot for the turning of the complete universe, and it is called the navel of Vishnu, Garbhadaksai Vishnu. The yogi alone goes beyond the circle of Shishumara and ascends the planet Maharloka, where purified saints like Bhrigu enjoy a duration of life of 4,300,000,000 solar years. This planet is worship of a living for the saints. At the time of the final devastation of the complete universe, the end of the duration of Brahma's life, a flame of fire emanates from the mouth of Ananta, from the bottom of the universe. The yogi sees all the planets of the universe burning to ashes, and thus he leaves for Satyaloka by airplanes used by the great purified soul. The duration of life in Satyaloka is calculated to be 15,480,000,000,000 years. Therefore, it is indicated herein that the residents of Mahaloka, where the purified living entities, or demigods, possess a duration of life calculated to be 4,300,000,000 solar years, have airships by which they use Satyaloka, the topmost planet in the universe. In other words, the Srimad Bhagavatam gives us many clues about other planets far, far away from us, which modern planes and spacecraft cannot reach, even by imaginary speeds. The statements of Srimad Bhagavatam are accepted by great acharyas like Sridhar Swami, Ramanujacharya, and Vallabhacharya. Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu specifically accepts Srimad Bhagavatam as his spotless Vedic authority. And as such, no sane man can ignore the statements of Srimad Bhagavatam when it is spoken by the self-realized soul, Srila Shrutadeva Goswami, who follows in the footsteps of the great father, Srila Vyasa, the compiler of all Vedic literatures. In the creation of the Lord, there are many wonderful things we can see with our own eyes every day and night, but we are unable to reach them equipped by modern materialistic science. We should not, therefore, depend on the fragmentary authority of materialistic science for knowing things beyond the range of scientific security. For a common man, both modern science and Vedic wisdom are simply to be accepted because none of the statements, either modern science or Vedic literature, can be verified by him. The alternative for a common man is to believe either of them or both of them. The Vedic way of understanding, however, is more authentic because it has been accepted by the Acharyas, who are not only faithful and learned men, but are also liberated souls without any of the flaws of conditioned souls. The modern scientists, however, are conditioned souls liable to so many errors and mistakes. Therefore, the safe side is to accept the authentic version of Vedic literature by Srimad Bhagavatam, which is accepted unanimously by the great Acharyas. Only the understanding of that damage in our flesh. You're getting here information about the universe. No scientist would be able to confirm or deny. That doesn't mean it's mythology, just because mundane authorities can not confirm it. But these mundane authorities are quick to deny it. And actually, not only is confirmation outside of their power, but also denial is outside of their power. When you are a frog in the well, what do you know? Just like, for example, here in New Zealand, young New Zealanders are always anxious for their overseas experience because they feel, as they told me, that they're isolated from the world and they don't know what's going on. They have to get out and see what the rest of the world is like. Otherwise, they feel stunted in their growth. Whatever truth there may be in that, the point is that this is a healthy attitude for materialistic scientists and researchers to take. What do they know? They're locked up on a tiny planet, an insignificant planet, amongst countless planets. And yet, they're so proud of them. We are knowing about the universe. And when they hear these accounts from Srimad Bhagavatam, they think, definitely mythology. We say that their world is mythology. First of all, they think they're the body. Secondly, they have no consciousness of the effects, the ravages of time. Thirdly, they have no solution to the fact they're going to die. So, therefore, we say the materialists live in a mythological world. A world that ignores the control of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. We can see that persons have potencies and powers, whether it's to play music or do art or make business or so many things. What's wrong with powerful persons having powerful powers? What's wrong with that? You have a little power. So persons greater than you have greater powers. And the greatest power is possessed by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Only out of envy do you deny this relationship between potency and the powerful. When you study the Vedic literature, you learn. Parashashakti, Vivadaiva Sriyata. The Supreme Personality of Godhead has multifarious or diverse potencies. And through these potencies, he accomplishes his purposes. Sabhavati Jana Balakriyata. His strength, his knowledge, his activities, they all work automatically. If for you it takes some effort and some thinking and some struggle to get your strength and knowledge and activity doing something. But for Krishna, it is all spontaneous. sun's help over shelter is the sanctity term. Simply by Krishna's desiring, things happen. And immediately the strength for doing the activity, the knowledge for performing it, and the proper execution of that activity is all there. This is what makes Krishna's pastime so wonderful. You see that spontaneous, automatic display of knowledge, strength, and expertise in action without any impediment. Sometimes, though, Krishna likes to pretend he has a problem. Just like when he knows the example of Krishna pretending that he had a problem, or actually, for the sake of enjoyment, feeling like he had a problem. Yeah. The cowherd boy entered into the mouth of the Adasa Arjuna, and Krishna was perplexed. If I kill the snake, my friend will be inside. What to do? How to kill the snake and save my friend? He was enjoying the nectar of puzzle song, riddle song. I was speaking about this in South America. In South America, the word for puzzle or riddle is it's equivalent in English of saying head breaker. Things that break you, you break your head over trying to solve. But people, they like crossword puzzles, they like riddles, the TV they play with. So Krishna, he's just afraid of enjoyment. He also likes these things. In fact, the jiva, the part and parcel of the name, cannot enjoy puzzles unless Krishna enjoys puzzles. Because we are part of Krishna, we have all the energy of Krishna. So Krishna was experiencing the ecstasy of being confronted with a problem. There's never any problem for Krishna, but he's enjoying it. Oh, a problem, what to do? And then immediately, after he enjoyed it that way, he enjoyed by solving the problem, entering into a doctor's body and expanding himself so that the snake chokes. Isn't that fun? Entering into a gigantic snake and then expanding your body and choking the snake. Saving your friends. This is Krishna. All his activities flow without impediment. Even when there's an impediment, everything flows so smoothly. Because you can see the so-called impediment simply there for Krishna's pleasure. Pleasure resolves everything, doesn't it? That's what people hope for in the material world. After all is said and done, you had a good time. It was pleasure. That makes everything, you know, understandable. For this pleasure, people are willing to put up with so much. But I was, while driving up Monica Road to come here, I was watching the people, you know, driving to work, walking on the streets to work and school. So, you know, there's someone, obviously just got up probably, you know, half hour before they get to the street, you know. What are you going to do? Walk down from taking an herb or something, or, you know, not even that anymore, just some coffee and beverages. You know. Do they take showers in the morning with them or not? Yes?
Huh?
Opposite work. Opposite work. You know, get up, you know, brush their teeth, you're quick to work. Yeah, try to get all the flesh out between the teeth and put on some cologne or some perfume, you know, and eat some, you know, white bread and, you know, eggs, you know, yeah, good, you know, still do that, you know, before going to work, and something you can put them, you know, cereal or something, you know, coffee, of course, and get out on the street. And if you notice their faces, they look so cranky. So therefore you ask yourself, if sense education is so nice, why do they look so cranky in the morning? The perfection of their life is sense education at night. If it's so good, why do they look so cranky in the morning? Did you ever ask yourself that? If indeed it's so wonderful, why do they look so, you know, dissatisfied and cranky and grouchy? You'll watch, especially the ladies behind the wheel in the morning. You'll watch them. Crazy looking. It's totally like disappointed. You ever watch them, ladies, just driving at 8 o'clock in the morning? Don't they look cranky, mostly? Or they just look like disappointed or cheated or... Because they put all their hopes on, you know, nice sense gratification. And then, in the morning, these folks are not realized. And so, especially with cranky. The men, they don't look cranky, they just look fat. I'm like empty. The women look cranky. You notice that? You don't watch them, you say that. The men look totally spaced out in the haze, you know? Yeah. And the women just look nasty and cranky. So, this is the glare of Maya. Things look attractive when actually they just make you miserable. And basically, it's so powerful, this illusion, you can't really understand it. Krishna himself and Bhagavad Gita says, I do, he says, I don't know my answer. This material angry mind. So, practically impossible to cross over. It's so bewildering. You have to rise above it to see it. You have to become free from past and ignorance in order to see what's going on. Otherwise, from within, it's so bewildering. You can try to figure it out. That's why they make, in the past, I always say how they used to make so many songs. They still do about love and romance and how it's bewildering and how it doesn't work out the way you want. And now, I think what's happened is that they're so frustrated from their concept of love that they just make songs about bitterness and, you know, I'm your dad and, you know. So, you have to rise above the motives of past and ignorance. At least get the material motive of goodness before you see what's going on. And that is our program, purifying the living entity. Rising early in the morning, cleanliness, very controlled lifestyle in terms of the controlling our behavior and our senses. This all brings you to the motive of goodness. And then you can see from the motive of goodness, you can, of course, and you're supposed to step onto the sanctuary plane. But below the mode of goodness, you can't see how the mode of passion is of course, and you're in it. You can't see what's going on. And certainly, within the mode of passion ignorance, you're not going to understand the universe. You don't understand purpose like this. You'll think, well, I only live for 75 years at most. No one can live for 4,300,000,000 years. It's ridiculous. What is this stuff about the yogi sees all the planets of the universe burning gases and thus he boosts for such a localized airplane used by the great purified soul? Nonsense. How do you know? You could just say that you don't know. But people won't admit that. There's so many mysteries even on their own planet. Other planets. How do we resolve this problem? We accept that we have to take knowledge from authority. We accept that. And so we decide who the authority is going to be. Materialists cannot see that they're taking knowledge from authority. So how do you know what's going on with the media and the economy? Which authority are you going to listen to? The political party in power says, oh, actually everything's all right. We're working on the quality of life for all New Zealanders. The national party, which is out of power, says, oh, you're ruining the country. It's becoming, you know, like Tasmania. How do you know? You have to listen to someone. Your knowledge is dependent on who you listen to. So we compare the qualities of persons like Shukadev, Joyce Swami, and Lord Chaitanya with the qualities of mundane authority, and we make our choice. Otherwise, everything is inconceivable. You can't understand what the scientists are talking about when they try to explain the universe. So therefore, you look at the qualities of your mundane authority, and you look at the qualities of Shukadev, Goswami, Lord Chaitanya, like that. And you make your choice. after you make your choice, though, you should get some results. You should be able to see the effect of the proper choice. And that's what Krishna consciousness provides. It gives you the effect where you're making the proper choice. What's the first thing you'll notice? You'll notice you're coming up from the modes of past and ignorance. You'll notice a decrease in hankering. You'll notice that material desires don't seem so attractive anymore. You start to see the dirt for what it is. That's the first symptom. Those are the first symptoms of coming out of the gift of past and ignorance. You become attracted to purity. You become attracted to hearing about Krishna. These purports by Srila Prabhupada are training you in the highest ways of thinking. Don't underestimate them. They're immediately giving you the pinnacle, the height of philosophy. That's why anyone who studies these purports can handle anybody in a discussion. You get right to the point. Your knowledge is depending on authority. What's the quality? What are the qualities of your authority? What kind of results are you getting by hearing from those authorities? What you're doing for your life? Of course, what people need to say, oh, what does it matter what you're doing for my life? That's not the point. No, that is the point. Real knowledge should do something for your life. It should show that your life is being transformed. You want to talk about what your scientists are saying to you about the moon and Mars and this and that. Whatever. But what's it doing for you? Even if it's right, which it isn't, what's it doing for you?
Well, that doesn't matter what you're doing for me. I mean, they know what they're talking about. You know?
So, we can say like that. Even if we accept that they know what they're talking about, which they don't, but we'll just accept it for the sake of argument. What's it doing for you? You can learn how to speak like this just by studying Prabhupada. The Vedic knowledge is transformational. It's not simply the accumulation of concepts and ideas. No, this knowledge purifies. That's why Krishna and Bhagavad Gita talks about the fire of transcendental knowledge. It burns. It does things with this knowledge. The boat of transcendental knowledge. It takes you somewhere. Another example. Fire, boat, ascend and off the land. Janus, the vein of the boat ascend and off the land. Fire. Probably one more. Any questions? Knowledge that something is coming means preparation. If they know, then there should be evidence of preparation. But you don't get any evidence of preparation. That's what you're really talking about. No acknowledgement, no preparation. They have no solution. They're not prepared. You know, they think there's no solution. They don't even think about it. So when they say, I know I'm going to die, no, don't accept that. Knowing means preparation. Give them examples in everyday life. If they know something's going to happen, they prepare. That's if they know that the US dollar is going to crash, they try to change it into foreign currency. So knowledge means you can see the evidence of that knowledge. Preparation. If you know winter's coming, you have warm clothes.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Hare, Hare Hare, Hare Hare.